Hans and Scotty, 97.5, 1280 The Zone, and the Zone Sports Network.
New Chesta trailer found your car for $6,300.
There's no way I'm paying $60,000. That car was acquired via a trade for a mule. I'm not spending $6,300.
Yeah, but it's a classic now, Scotty. It's a classic now.
Yeah, no, that's not going to happen.
You paint that thing, put some new wheels on it, and you could probably get $12,000 out of it.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. Yeah. All right, Hans Olsen, Scott Girard, 97.5, 1280 The Zone. Andy Bailey joining us from Bleacher Report, one of the best NBA writers out there. Andy, before we get started, your first car, what did you drive?
Oh, man, 1988 or 89 Suburban with fabric seats and the wiper fluid shot forward instead of at the windshield, which was fun for me.
I love it.
Could you turn it to the sides to spray cars on your sides?
I generally sprayed cars in front of me. I never tried sideways. That's a missed opportunity on my part.
Andy, where's your concern level on the Jazz right now?
I would say low to moderate. Obviously 2-8 in a 10-game stretch is not good for any team. But I think there's a few things going on. The obvious ones are obviously injuries to Gobert and Mitchell and not, you know, being right on top of each other. So it's pretty much as soon as Gobert came back, Mitchell went out. I was actually just looking at this morning. even after this 2-8 stretch, when the Jazz have Mitchell, Conley, and Gobert on the floor, they're plus 16 points per 100 possessions, which is 99th percentile in the league. So when they've got their guys healthy and available, I think they're still a juggernaut. Those three have only played 35 minutes together over the course of this skid that Utah's on. So I think that's the most obvious reason to say, you know, we don't need to hit the panic button yet. The other thing is, I think this has been true of the last 2 years, and Utah was kind of able to rise above it last season, but there's a lot more parity in the NBA this year. And a lot of teams have had slides like this over the course of this season. We've seen it from a bunch of title contenders, whether it's injuries or health and safety protocols or just a couple guys in a funk. We've seen a lot of teams sort of regress back to the middle. And I think statistically, if you're just looking at stuff like point differential and lineup data and stuff like that, I think Utah is still in that contender tier, even if their record is dropping closer to the field. So, yeah, I think there's mild concern just because you never want to lose 8 out of 10 games. But there's still plenty of good indicators for this team.
So, Andy, if there is, you know, some concern in that moderate area, what is the area of concern that you have for the Jazz?
I think a big problem that's been pointed out a lot, and I think is true, is there's not a ton of defense after Rudy Gobert and Royce O'Neal. And really, there's even sort of a drop-off from Rudy Gobert to Royce O'Neal. So there's just so much on his shoulders, and there has been for a couple years now. And it was understandable the direction the front office went after, you know, the first few years that Quinn Snyder was in Utah. They were very much a grinded-out team, almost like those Pistons teams with Ben Wallace. I mean, it was just defense, defense, defense. When they finally surrounded him with a ton of shooting, the offense exploded. But now there's just so much responsibility on Gobert's shoulders. And a lot of people have suggested potential, you know, offense for defense trades. You know, are you willing to sacrifice a point or two off your offensive rating to make the defense a little bit better? And I do think that would be worth it, depending on the deal for the Jazz. One name that's been floated a lot is obviously Bogdanovich. I don't know if that's the route to go. He's just such a good shooter for them. He's kind of positionless on defense, even though he's not an elite defender. At least you can trust him to guard bigger guys. You know, if there was a deal out there for Clarkson, I think that's something that I would maybe explore if I'm the front office. But generally speaking, yeah, I think the defense has to get a little better. I think a lot of people still see Utah as this defensive identity team because of Gobert, because of those first few years with Snyder. But that really hasn't been the case the last couple seasons. They are very much an offensive team, so they could use a little help on the other end.
Andy Bailey joining us right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone. Do you think Danny Ainge has changed many stripes. Do you anticipate it'll still be same old aggressive Danny that takes over this Jazz team? Or do you think he waits a little bit to kind of get the lay of the land before he jumps cannonballs into the trade waters?
I'm going to be political and guess. I guess I'll say I could see either one of those scenarios. The tricky thing with Utah's front office to me is it just seems like there's a lot of voices in there at this point. I don't know how much say ownership has. I mean, they obviously have the final call, but you have a basketball guy in Dwayne Wade in the ownership group. You've got Danny Ainge now with some job titles that I don't think we've seen before the Jazz hired him to be the alternate governor. Then, of course, there's Justin Zanuck, who was, you know, in charge of things when Dennis Lindsay moved to a consulting role or whatever his title is now. So there could be a lot of different opinions in there, and I think in some ways that's good. It's good to talk things out and come to a consensus, but there's also the risk of the too many cooks thing. So Danny Ainge may think, okay, I'm new here. Here are the things that I think we should switch up, but maybe Justin Zanuck's in the background thinking, I built this team. We've got a dominant offense. I'm attached to these two, you know, problems that you identified. So I think it could be tricky to sort through all that. Based on, you know, the slide that they're on, I would not be surprised to see them make sort of a mid-tier move. But I don't think we're going to see anything dramatic from the Jazz to trade down. And that's always kind of an easy answer to make because trades are always less likely to happen than they are to happen. I don't know if that sentence made sense. But, I would guess that they'll play it mostly safe, but I wouldn't be surprised if something happens.
Over the years of you watching Danny Ainge manage in the NBA and make the moves he's made and build the teams that he's built – and I do know he's got some championship love in there. When you saw the Jazz make that hire, what was your first impression of it, and how much do you trust Danny Ainge in his ability to continue to manage in today's NBA?
My first impression, well, I'll backtrack to long before the hire was made because there was a lot of speculation that this was a possibility right when he left the Celtics. Which I thought was interesting. I don't know if he had family in Utah he wanted to be closer to or something, but it seemed like he had a pretty good situation in Boston and maybe things went sour there before he left. So I found it fascinating that as soon as he left, there were already rumblings that, oh, he could end up with the Jazz, where he seems like a guy who might be ready to walk away from the game entirely. So I wasn't surprised when they finally, you know, announced the hire or the news was broken by whoever broke it. But my initial reaction is probably what I just outlined. What is his role exactly? And what is Justin Zanuck's role at this point? What is Dwayne Wade's role at this point? Just day to day, like who's in charge of what? Is the final say with Ainge? Is the final say with ownership? That's the curious part of all of it to me. And then another part of your question is whether or not I think he can still build in today's NBA. I think his recent track record in Boston is not too bad. Obviously, they've been kind of record-wise mediocre this season and last. But what he did in the draft to get Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, I think, is impressive. So I think he still has an eye for talent. So long-winded way of saying I think he's pretty good at what he does still. I don't know who's in charge, which is the interesting part of it to me.
Andy Bailey joining us here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone. If you had to put some Skittles on Ben Simmons being with Philadelphia, not on the court, obviously, but being still a 76er after the trade deadline, how many you feel confident in that?
I'm still leaning towards a trade. I know a lot of the reports that have come out in the last few days go against that, but we are deep into the misinformation NBA report season. I don't know how I want to label that. But within 2 or 3 weeks of the trade deadline, you're going to hear a lot of reports that may be put out there just to drum up somebody's trade value. I certainly think that's the case with what's going on in Houston this week. The fact that they said that they're not going to move Christian Wood or Eric Gordon, that doesn't really make sense on a logical level to me. So I would guess a team like that is still fielding offers for those players, and I think the same is probably true of Philadelphia. I don't remember exactly what Daryl Morey said on the radio recently, but he said something like, you know, we have a deal with Sacramento that we think we could do, but we're not going to do it right now, and chances are Ben Simmons will be here after the trade deadline, and then maybe we'll entertain some sign-and-trade thing with James Harden in the summer. And I think a lot of that could be sort of a way to say we're content to sit here with Ben Simmons at home all season unless you know, other GMs, whoever he's interacting with around the league, are willing to meet our asking price. And I would guess that at least one out of these 30 teams or 15 or whatever the field is for Ben Simmons on deadline day or the day before or something is going to think, okay, we got to make a shot at this. We got to take a real swing at it. So I think there's still a good chance that he could be moved. But if Daryl Morey, through some back channel communication, has a lot of confidence that James Harden wants to come to Philadelphia in the summer, I wouldn't blame him for waiting on that either. As far as Skittles, I think I'm going to push more towards a trade happening. But this is another one that's certainly tough to call. I mean, we've all been trying to predict this situation for 6 or 7 months now.
Yeah, we talked yesterday. Our theory is that the media leak on the on Harden not being happy in Brooklyn came from Daryl Morey.
That wouldn't surprise me. I hadn't thought of that. Wouldn't surprise me at all, because I think it was referenced, former teammates or executives who are around Harden or something like that. So that could be a good call.
Andy, I wanted to ask you a little bit about the Western Conference in general, where you're missing Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, Jamal Murray. You're missing some of those stars. Could we possibly see a postseason that includes Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, and Jamal Murray? Of course, two with the Clippers and Jamal Murray with Denver.
Some of the rumblings I've heard from some Denver reporters, and I'm certainly not sourced within that market, but I think they are. They're confident that Murray could be back within the next month,
wow,
6 weeks, something like that. His warm-ups before games are starting to ramp up. The one that might even surprise me even more is Michael Porter Jr. is starting to warm up before games too. I don't know the nature of the back surgery that he had. There's a wide range of recovery options when it comes to back surgery. But if Denver has both of those guys back, even if it's a week or two before the playoffs, they are suddenly a very, very dangerous team. So I do think Murray will be back before the playoffs. I'm completely in the dark on Michael Porter Jr. There's a big difference between shooting around before a game and playing in an NBA game. Kawhi, at the time he tore his ACL, I just assumed there's no way he'll be back next season because the playoffs were later last year. He's always been abundantly cautious with injury recoveries going back to San Antonio. That's part of their big blow up between each other. So I just assumed this was going to be one of those 12-month plus ACL recoveries. But we have seen some reports that maybe he might be available before the playoffs. So right now the Clippers are in ninth. If they suddenly get both of those guys back a week or two ahead of the play-in tournament, imagine being the Pelicans or the Blazers or whatever team might have to face them in the play-in tournament. Suddenly the West is every bit as chaotic as it's ever been. If the Clippers sneak in as an 8 or a 7 seed, I don't think those top 2 seeds are safe. If those two guys are healthy and playing anywhere near the level they did last year. And one interesting thing about the Clippers too is some guys are really stepping up for them while these two have been out. I assumed when Paul George went down, they were just going to sort of fall in the tank. But they've got big contributions from guys like Amir Coffey and Luke Kennard, and Reggie Jackson has had his moments. And these guys are all building confidence right now. So if they've got a slightly better supporting cast when those two come back, they're going to be a difficult matchup for sure too.
Is there a light at the end of the tunnel for the Lakers, or is this just going to be a miserable finish for them?
I would lean towards miserable finish just based on what I've seen so far and based on what we've seen from Russell Westbrook the last couple of years. I'm hesitant to say that definitively because they still have LeBron James who has somehow turned the clock back again. It's probably been 2 months now, have just been absurd. And now that Anthony Davis is back, maybe they get a little bit of momentum. But the reason I lean the other way is when they made that trade for Russell Westbrook, this was the obvious. Everything that's happened is what we expressed we thought might happen at the time of the trade. Both of those guys need the ball. If you're going to give it to one, you're going to give it to LeBron. And to sort of relegate Russell Westbrook to a shooting guard role just seems like madness to me. I mean, he's never demonstrated himself to be a good off-ball player. If he would even try to do Gary Payton II type stuff or Bruce Brown type stuff and cut to the rim, look for easy opportunities that way, he'd be better. But he's just so – and I guess I don't blame him. It's been over 10 years where he is the focal point on offense. So it's probably a really difficult adjustment for him to make. If he does make it at some point, maybe LA can be another scary team at the bottom of the playoffs for the West. But I think I lean towards it's just kind of going to be like it has been all season long. They're just going to kind of scrape along at 500 and they're going to come up against a good complete team in the playoffs like the Suns and probably get beat pretty handily.
Then does Vogel make it through the season?
That's a good question too. I think if they go on a little run here with Anthony Davis, he certainly has some job security, but I don't know if I've seen a situation that was quite as tenuous as this one. For them to have reports right after games on back-to-back nights or back-to-back games, I don't know when this was, a week or two ago. Tonight he may be fired. Tonight his job is safe. It does feel like a game-by-game thing. So if they just keep treading along and playing mediocre, I don't think he will survive. So, yeah, there's my answer on that one.
Well, it just seems like, I mean, let's be honest here, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but it does feel like the de facto GM of the Lakers is LeBron James. And if LeBron James wants him fired, then he's going to be fired. So is LeBron, is he wavering on a decision on whether or not he will, tell Pelinka, hey, you need to get rid of him? Or is it, because to me, it just seems like it's a foregone conclusion. If you're going to fire, let's just get over. If I'm Frank Vogel, I'm like, look, let's just get this over with and let's move on. Because obviously you guys don't want me here.
I thought the second part of what you said for a while now. I don't know how you would coach with that axe hanging over your head. And I guess this isn't something that's exclusive to Frank Vogel. I mean, other LeBron James coaches have had to deal with that. So I'm with you there. And you make a good point about LeBron. I mean, he really is sort of a de facto GM of that team, and he has been of many teams over the years. I'm sure his general managers would probably disagree with me. But he's got a huge amount of influence on the decisions that his organizations make. So, yeah, if I'm Frank Vogel, I'm thinking just pull the Band-Aid off and let's be done with this. But it wasn't that long ago that Davis and LeBron and Vogel all won a title together. So maybe there's some shred of good vibes between them left from that. But right now it seems pretty chaotic.
Well, hey, we appreciate your time. Always good catching up with you, and look forward to catching up with you again here soon.
No problem. Thanks for having me, guys.
Andy Bailey, right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.